Joe Boyson, retired Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and just wanted to know, you've extracted your vapor samples at varying temperatures, and then you go and do GCMS analysis on it.
No, so what we do, just so you understand the method. So we'll put about 0.1 gram, 100 milligram into a vial, and we can run that at different temperatures and look at the headspace above those. That's the vaporization potential. But the work to rule out compound A versus compound, that would be a lot of work to determine the toxicity. So what we did as a second step, we just heat that up to those temperatures, cool it down, and then run that as if it's a sample that we're running for residual solvent. And use the residual solvent internationally accepted levels to rule it in or out.
Okay, so the question I'm asking is, under what conditions do you run your equipment, right?
Okay.
So that you're not contributing to the degradation.
Yes. So what we do, so we do our residual solvent analysis at 95 degrees Celsius, and we don't see degradations at that temperature, so we get a good reflection of it. But that temperature is low enough that we're not volatilizing things like vitamin E acetate. We're only getting the traditional residual solvents. And this, we have validated residual solvent tests that meet USP 467 with this. So this is a standard acceptable method. That's why we're running at that temperature. And we know it doesn't, because that's what we run everything with residual solvents.
So, Rob, you really mean when you said, you know, you can identify all these things, but what is known about the toxicity?
Yeah.
I think that's an important element where I believe eventually any working group that is formed will need the input.
Exactly. So here's the thing with that. So this is a screening method that we're proposing to identify the next vitamin E acetate and tell producers, do not put this in the mixture. However, the vaporization profile at different temperatures, that's where we get what's actually would be delivered with that. And this isn't an end piece. This is a work in progress. But you're right. We would then have to identify the toxicity of each of those, because clearly we haven't identified what the problem is with vitamin E acetate. There's other people who are looking at small ketones and ketenes and stuff, and there's others who are looking at other things. But that's what you would use that full vaporization potential to figure out. This is just a way so that tomorrow, the next guy says, hey, Phytol is a great one, let's try that. Okay.
Exactly. So I think the important thing is to differentiate between correlation and causation.
Yes.
Something may be present, but whether that's what is causing or at what level it causes. So the publications from CDC were wonderful. And I trust CDC now more than ever. With all that's going on. So inputs such as those are needed for this kind of
work. Exactly.
That's what I wanted to emphasize.
Well, what we should be talking to physicians about is what's delivered at those temperatures, and have them determine if those chemical agents are leading to the toxicity. Right,
exactly. And USP 467 is applicable to everything in the compendia. It's in the journal notices.
Yeah.
But the question is whether it is applicable to something that is incinerated. I don't know.
Well, it's not incinerated, and this is actually, this came from our friend in Health Canada here, who also suggested to me, if you use ICH standards, it says any mode of delivery.
It's the same.
Yeah,
so
it can be data. Yeah. So this is at least something. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel before we remove these products that are killing people from the marketplace.
Well, there's more to it, whether ICH or USP, they are aligned. But the important thing is that these are on a risk-based assessment, and so applicable to the pharmaceuticals, where you have a process, a synthetic process, where you're contributing to some of these residual solvents. Whereas what we see here is a repertoire of chemicals at different levels. So what's the combined effect of these things?
So I'll ask you that question. So how do you determine that type of toxicity to rule out Phytol and vitamin E acetate? What work would you need to do within your organization to, and how long would it take?
Exactly. That I don't have an answer.
Yes.
But what my suggestion is that for this kind of group, input from the toxicologist is needed. That is my recommendation.
Yeah, and that is absolutely correct. However, I want to make sure that the next vitamin E acetate is off the shelves before it gets there. And this is an approach using the equivalent residual solvents to at least do that. It's not the end of the thing, but it at least does that. Should we be vaporizing lipids and breathing them in? Probably not. But at least this gives me something.
Right. Yeah, we're in uncharted territory, so I think we need help there.
Okay, this might show my ignorance because I've never smoked and I've never vaped.
We should get together now.
But why?
I can't help it. I'm fine. Right? Maybe.
Okay, but why do you need an elevated temperature if you want a fix of nicotine or CBD or THC? Why can't you just inhale it or use an aerosol device just to get it into your lungs?
Because THC and CBD cannabinoids are not in the gas phase at room temperature. They're larger molecules. We don't really see efficient transport of those until around 180. And the other thing is, when we talk about these heated devices used for vaporization, we need to put it against the other way of doing it, which is smoking a joint, which is a bad idea because it produces a lot of problems. So this is a harm reduction approach. So let's understand the harm reduction approach. And the same thing with the e-cigarettes and stuff. The other approach is smoking a cigarette. We know it kills people. We know it does bad things. So maybe the e-cigarettes could be a harm reduction approach, and that's what they originally promoted. But you need a temperature, at least 150 or so, before you get these chemical profiles in the gas phase.
But even with nicotine as well.
Yeah, that's why the e-cigarettes are heated. Otherwise, people would just be... And then the other thing, besides the heating thing, there's also a psychological thing. For whatever reason, people just like sticking something in their mouth and blowing smoke out. Well, don't really. That wasn't my mind. Remember that. That was your mind. So.
Okay, so I wonder how nicotine patches and nicotine gum works.
Well, they haven't worked to get people to quit smoking.
They haven't?
You can promote that. Look. There's a lot of things with public health. I can say, look, teenagers, you shouldn't drink. You shouldn't have premarital sex. But they will. It's impossible. So what we want to do is find a harm reduction that reduces their risk. And that's the same thing with smoking. Don't smoke, I'm telling you, don't do it. But if you're going to, vaping at a low temperature is probably better, definitely better than smoking a cigarette. Or a joint with no filter. Really, no filter. Yeah.
Hi there. A question, actually. So, I'm not really sure how these vape pens are structured, you know.
Yeah.
But the question is, like, if you heat and then cool a juice in a glass vial, versus like having the metals of like the coil present, could the metals like analyze additional reactions?
You're absolutely right, and even some terpenes. They can be catalyzed by metal. So this is not saying, this is just a way to get rid of some of the ingredients types. But we realize we do have to go back to the sampling devices, I'm sure you, where we look at the output of this and assess that. This is not replacing that. This is a way to look at all the possible ingredients and formulations and trying to rule out, this one looks like it's bad and this one looks less bad.
So if you added some of the metals like in the vial actually, like as you warmed it up and just like saw if it...
We can do that. So there's lots of things. So the question is, people have found lead leaching into some of the solution and they've lost their mind for that. But we need to know, is that lead actually being transferred to the consumer? And if it is, it's a big problem. If it's not, well, maybe it doesn't matter. And then we also have to look at, maybe that lead is converted to an organometallic. Then that's a real big problem. So we have to look at that. Yes, yes, indeed. And I'm not saying we're covering all the bases. I'm saying we're starting with something that will keep a few more kids from dying over the next year.
Thank you.
It strikes me as you're describing your work that, and you're describing the challenge in terms of identifying the
toxicity associated with all these pyrolysis products, for want of a better term, that you can combine the work that you've been doing with some of the work that the flavor people have been doing in terms of, you know, when they're going through approving a lot of these natural flavors, a lot of these, they've kind of classified these compounds into chemical structures. And we have kind of a general range and the understanding of what the toxicity is of different chemical structures. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to work with the Flavor Extract Manufacturers Association and people like those, like that, and their toxicologists to kind of bring the analytical data on this in with the toxicology data that they already have.
Yes, absolutely. And even some terpenes like pinene, which is really not considered a big problem. In fact, when you walk through the woods, you're getting some pinene in. But if you heat this up to 300 degrees Celsius, that converts over to benzene as well. So there's really, and if you come up with anything, don't do anything at 300 degrees Celsius. It's a bad idea. But maybe at these lower temperatures, and we do have to understand that. But the first thing we need to do tomorrow is prevent these compounds going into products that would cause problems. And let's make sure we also understand 30% of the concentrates market is about 30% of the cannabis market, almost exclusively used in vaporizers. Of the smoke, of the flower market, about half of that is, so about half the market is really a vaporized product. And so we need to understand that vaporized product can come out with fit for purpose applications. And irregardless of how bad you think vaping may be, what we're comparing it to is smoking a joint, typically without a filter, or smoking a cigarette. Both are really bad. And the knee-jerk reaction just to ban flavoring agents wouldn't have helped with this. The reason that this was added is it helps the characteristic of the liquids when you're putting this very viscous material into the cartridges, right? So I think maybe you should allow flavoring, but just not with nicotine, right? So that's the problem. We need to face the problems. The problems is toxicity. The problem is addictive behavior. But besides that, we need to see how this goes. Yeah?
Just to add to what Henry was saying, at the University of Saskatchewan, we've got a department, the toxicology department, that does a lot of acute and chronic studies to determine what levels of toxicity will cause the kinds of activities that you're looking at. So if it is something that you're
interested in. Connect me up, I'll send them all our data. If they want things run, I'll do whatever they want. We'll get it done.
All right. Yeah. Absolutely.
You get one more.
Okay, one last question. Okay, so how do you set the temperature on a vaping device? Is it user selectable? Is it dialing the temperature?
So that's one of the reasons we first wanted to understand what things work like in a very controlled environment. Some vaporizers have actual temperature settings. Some have voltage settings. Voltage settings that are going into a wire that gets heated thermoresistively, and the resistance can change with liquid in contact or not. So yes, that's a problem. But the other thing is, if we understand, let's say we understood the breakdown of a reference material that we developed, and we know what profile it has at different temperatures, we could use that as a probe to see what the effective temperature is in a device. And those type of approaches, yeah? So anyway, we need to work this up. We need to work with people measuring off the devices, but people in the tobacco industry have been working on that for 20 years, and they've done fantastic work, but they didn't prevent these kids from dying from vitamin E acetate. And that's my primary concern, is to make sure that we don't have another tragedy like that come to fruition. And pigeons, you better watch out for this thing. I don't know where that
Thank you very much. And we can continue this question.